This is the Mormon Expression Podcast. Find us on the web at mormonexpression.com.
Okay, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. We're pleased to have with us tonight a special guest, Michael Reed. Mike was born in the church and has pioneer ancestry on both sides. Says he's related to Joseph Smith Jr., has served in many callings and served a full-time mission in the Baltimore, Maryland mission. Shortly after returning from his mission, he joined FAIR and wrote a few articles for them, and then later wrote a book review for Farms. He's been involved in apologetics and Mormon studies for over 10 years. Graduated from CSU Sacramento with a BA in Humanities and Religious Studies and an MA in Liberal Arts that you just completed. Is that right?
That is right. Yes.
Completed his thesis on the development of the LDS Church attitude toward the cross, which we'll be talking about tonight. And spoke at the last Salt Lake City Sunstone Symposium. His research has been recently covered by the Salt Lake Tribune and Deseret News' own Mormon Times. Mike, welcome to Mormon Expression.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So maybe we can start out by talking about, and I forgot to introduce our illustrious panel. Tonight we have a smaller panel. We have Niall.
Hello. It's actually more efficient.
A more efficient panel. Niall coming at us from Norway, and the lovely and talented Zilf is with us tonight.
Hello.
Okay, so Mike, why don't you get us started and tell us kind of, first of all, how did you get an interest in Mormonism and the cross?
That is a good question. It's really hard to trace as far back as I've been interested. When I was a kid, I stole a cross from a local store, and I wore it to church on the following Sunday to defiantly show everybody where my spiritual status was before God. and I look back at that kind of thinking how interesting it is. You know, to most Christians, that would seem a conflict that I would go to church with a stolen cross and wear it to show my spiritual status. But really, if you think about me being Mormon, that's the answer to the riddle, you know, because the cross is generally viewed as being a symbol of apostasy. There really wasn't any conflict with my actions as far as stealing the cross goes.
Did you give it back?
What's that?
Did you give it back?
I didn't. No, I don't know what happened to it, actually. It's been a very long time. Yeah. But then later on, as I matured and became more responsible, I got my act together, served a mission for the church, served in Baltimore, Maryland. And one of our investigators that we were teaching one day told my companion and I that he decided that he wanted to join the church, that he received a sign from God and that he should join. And we were excited, of course, thrilled that he made this decision, but then as he proceeded to tell us about the sign, we started to have a little bit of questions deep down inside. And he told us that he saw a cross of flames in a dream, and that this was evidence that he needed to join the church. And of course, my companion and I didn't really say anything about the dream, and we just asked him if he would be baptized, which he accepted that invitation to do. It really caused a conflict in my mind, not knowing why God would answer a question to join the church with an apostate symbol. Just didn't make sense to me. And so from then on, after my mission, I joined apologetics. I kind of put those ideas on, on the shelf. You know, I didn't really think about it too much. As I would have these debates with people about the topic of Mormons and the cross, I would repeat the packaged explanations of why members of the church don't use it. But when I entered graduate,
what is that explanation?
Well, there's a couple of them. Probably the most popular ones are, one being, if Jesus was killed, or if your brother was killed, by a gun, would you wear a gun around your neck to remember him? And then the other one that's actually become the most popular right now is Gordon B. Hinckley's statement that the cross is a symbol of the dying Christ, it's a symbol of death, and that Mormons believe that Jesus is alive and resurrected, and therefore that's where the focus should be. Yeah.
Now, I think most people, I agree with that. Growing up, I saw the cross, for some reason, as an object almost of revulsion. It was something that definitely separated us as Mormons from the rest of the apostate world. And I think that's the way most people take it. I think the most interesting thing on your research that maybe you can lead us through is it hasn't always been that way. Mormons didn't start out from the beginning with this attitude about the cross, and that's what was most surprising to me.
Yeah, it doesn't appear to have been the case. I assumed that that was the case. There's a popular theory among scholars today where it's acknowledged that mainstream Protestantism in general rejected the symbol of the cross in the early 19th century at the time that the church was first being established. And so as the theory goes is that when people joined the church that they carried these assumptions with them about the cross. And then when they moved west into Utah and were cut off from the rest of the world, Mormonism didn't take part in the shift that Protestantism took part in where they started accepting the symbol of the cross, accepting it.
I have a question. So was the original reason why the Protestants didn't want to use the cross was because it was so connected with Catholicism?
Right. That is the basic reason. Of course, they had additional reasons on top of that, being an idol. Some people said it was the mark of the beast. Some even repeated the same apologetic that we hear Mormons say today about, if somebody was hung, would you wear a noose around your neck? Things like that. So these arguments aren't original to Mormonism. The Mormons actually recycled them. But the theory that I was talking about before about what scholars tend to be saying today is that when Mormons were cut off, they didn't partake in that shift. And so when I began my research, I was looking for these early Mormon statements, for this evidence of early Mormons rejecting the symbol of the cross, and I couldn't find any. Couldn't find anything at all until, actually, the earliest negative statement that I found toward the cross was in 1877. Then I found a couple others right around that time in 1880 and 1881. And so that was quite surprising to me. And that, of course, led to questions like, well, why can't I find those things, you know? Why can't I find evidence of an aversion in early Mormonism toward the cross? And that's really where things started to move forward in my research. Before then, I seemed to be at a dead end.
That's interesting. Do you see any correlation between the rising contempt for the cross and polygamy?
No. I don't know why there would be a connection, except for the fact that when Mormons started dropping, when they officially dropped polygamy, this was a time. Before then, it was the retrenchment phase of Mormonism. And after Mormons dropped polygamy, they entered into assimilation. They had a concern for showing the world that not only were they true Americans or more American than everybody else, extremely patriotic, but they also were very concerned with convincing everybody that they're a Christian, like everybody else. And I think that this gave rise to some members wanting to use the symbol more than ever. And then there was a backlash to this at the same time. There's a number of factors that were happening. This all happened where the issue towards the cross polarized. It all happened at the turn of the 20th century, or around that time period.
I guess why I ask that is, it seems like there comes a point in church history after they come to Utah that they go out of their way to separate themselves even further than the desert would have otherwise separated them.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the Word of Wisdom becoming a commandment, and other weird things sort of come up. I wonder if the cross is one of those. What do you think?
As far as the negative view toward the cross, it really started, that really started becoming an issue in Mormonism after Mormons already had dropped the practice of polygamy.
So when, you say around the 20th century is when the turn of the 20th century. What do you think marked the rhetorical shift where they started focusing on it rather than just an absence of it?
I think that what fed it was the same thing that fed the early Protestant negativity towards this symbol. In early 19th century Protestantism, it became a controversy because Catholics were kind of migrating into the United States by the wagon load. You know, they were increasing their numbers exponentially. And in regards to Mormonism, Catholics really didn't start to have a real presence in the state of Utah until this time period around just before the turn of the 20th century. There was also a number of conflicts that were happening, in the church, not only within the state of Utah, but especially abroad. Missionaries are being heavily persecuted. Missionary work was failing in areas where the nations were predominantly Catholic. And of course, then there's the war in Mexico. There was a couple. The missionaries were pulled out of Mexico, and stake presidents, or I mean the branch presidents, Monroy and Morales, were held at gunpoint because of their religion, basically, and they were told to confess the Virgin Mary, and if they didn't, they would be killed, and they refused, and they were shot and murdered. And so I think things like this started to increase tension for Mormons, and then also there was a new bishop, Bishop Glass, of the Catholic Diocese, Utah Catholic Diocese. He came into the state of Utah and was a bit heavy-handed in the criticisms that he made against the LDS Church. One example is that he criticized Mormons for dancing on Good Friday. He published a complaint in the newspaper and condemned them and tried to rally his fellow Christians who are Catholic and non-Catholic against the church to speak out against the church for their members dancing on Good Friday. And this really angered a lot of, not only a lot of members of the church, but also non-members who thought it was presumptuous for this Catholic bishop to try and impose his religious convictions upon others. And so I think a combination of these factors is what led to the church starting to have a polarized issue towards the cross.
So do we see at that time a higher level of negative rhetoric towards Catholics as opposed to American Protestants?
The rhetoric existed early on in the church, but then another wave of anti-Catholicism revived during this time. So it seems like that this was another wave of tension that the church had with Catholicism.
And that was just mirroring what was going on in the greater public in the United States. Is that correct? There was a rather anti-Catholic feelings all through the U.S.
Right. As far as the early anti-Catholicism that the that members of the church had expressed, yeah, it was pretty much mirroring what was going on. But as far as the LDS negative perception of the symbol, by the time Mormons started rejecting the symbol, Protestants had already started embracing it. So there really isn't a mirror image of that in regards to the symbol of the cross.
So let's go back a little bit. We've talked about some of the rejection. Now let's talk about the evidences early on where, at least in some instances, the image was embraced. Now, I know there's some controversy around whether or not there was a cross on top of the Kirtland Temple.
Yeah, I'm not aware of a cross being on the Kirtland Temple. I mean, there was a weather vane on top, and I guess it was kind of in a in a cross form. But it was, if you look closely at it, it's an arrow.
An arrow.
And, yeah.
What does the arrow stand for?
You know, it's just a weather vane. You mean like the direction of the wind.
Oh, yeah, like it's normally below the rooster. I got it.
Right. Sometimes they'll have a rooster. But yeah, you, Protestants in general in the early church usually did weather vanes instead of crosses. Yeah.
So in all the symbolism that shows up, in particular on the Nauvoo Temple, then in the Salt Lake Temple, there aren't any, crosses?
Well, in the Kirtland Temple, above the doorway, it said no cross, no crown. And, that phrase basically meant that is that, through the cross of Christ, you're able to receive exaltation. It's through Jesus' suffering that you're able to receive salvation. So that's kind of an interesting phrase to be placed above the door of the temple.
Yeah.
But as far as the Nauvoo Temple goes, I argue that there is a cross, that there are a number of crosses on the Nauvoo Temple. And these are found around the pentagram windows that are on the temple. There's a cruciform stonework surrounding those windows.
What's cruciform stonework?
It's stone. If you were to look at a closely at an image of the restored Nauvoo Temple and even some of the older photographs of the original Nauvoo Temple, there is stonework in the there's brickwork around the windows of the Nauvoo Temple that have pentagrams, and those are in the form of Greek crosses, equal armed crosses.
Okay.
Yeah. And I argue in my thesis that symbolizes the LDS endowment. I don't want to get into too much detail about it because, you know, the temple endowment is a sensitive topic, you know, for Latter-day Saints especially. I don't know how to say this. In Freemasonry, there was the five points of fellowship.
Right.
That was associated with the pentagram. So here we have the pentagram windows, that I believe are symbolic of the, that meaning. As you may know, there are parallels to this in the LDS endowment, especially before the editing happened in 1990. But it is during this time in the LDS endowment that one receives symbols of the wounds of Jesus.
Right.
And so, associating the cross with the wounds of Jesus on, the cross around the windows, it seemed to be a pretty close fit. There are a couple statements, actually one in particular I'm thinking right now of, where it talks about how by receiving these wounds or these tokens or whatever, that they are riveted to the cross of Christ or something like along those lines. And so I argue in my thesis that's what the cruciform stonework symbolizes along with the five-pointed stars on the windows.
So are you implying that there's a connection between Freemasonry and the Mormon endowment?
Yes. Yes.
There goes Niall off touting false doctrine again.
Hey, George, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, so we've talked about the Nauvoo Temple. What about in Salt Lake? Anywhere in the architecture?
Not that I know of. I've looked all over the place at the Salt Lake Temple, seeing if I could find anything on the outside. I've been told that there are shields on the inside, in I think the Celestial Room, that have crosses on them. It was mentioned, or that was mentioned at the Mormon History Association at a presentation that I had attended, but I asked the presenter for photographs and he didn't have any, so I don't know if that's true or not.
Now, in your paper, at least in the Salt Lake Tribune, I saw a picture of was it one of Brigham's wives that had a cross around her neck?
Right, that was Amelia Folsom Young, one of his polygamous wives. Yeah, I found quite a few examples of Mormons wearing crosses as jewelry, in particular with Brigham Young, actually. Two or three of his daughters. I know of two. There's one photograph where it's it's, I guess it could, I guess you could say it could be debated, or it could be debated, over who that daughter is that is wearing the cross. I think it's a third, daughter that is wearing a cross. If it isn't, if it's Tallulah Young, as the photograph description, names her, then it would only be two. But otherwise, I think it's Clarissa Young. She looks, the girl in the photo looks a lot more like her, Clarissa. Yeah.
Mike.
Yes.
Has there ever been a time in Mormon history where wearing a cross was explicitly forbidden by the church leadership?
It didn't become an issue. It didn't become institutionalized in this way until 1957. And that was under the direction of David O. McKay, who was prophet at the time. There was concern about a store who was pushing the sales of crosses to young Latter-day Saint girls. And Bishop Worthlin approached David O. McKay about this and asked if that was an appropriate thing for Latter-day Saints to do, to wear these crosses. And he said no. He said it's a Catholic symbol, it's a Catholic custom. Our worship should be in our hearts, we should not do this. And so, yeah, that's the time. It was 1957 that this happened, that it was institutionalized.
So was it like a letter that went out to everybody, or was it sort of private communication?
It was private communication over the phone. The presiding bishop was intending to pass that information on to other Latter-day Saints.
So when is the first instance of a kind of an official or quasi-official communication going out, or is there one?
There really isn't any. There's a whole lot of implied statements in LDS publications. But I guess the closest thing to an official statement would be this instruction that Prophet gave to the presiding bishop to pass that information along, what I just mentioned, actually.
So, in the materials that are released today, is there anything in the current Church Handbook of Instruction or any of the Young Women's Manuals or Young Men's Manuals about this type of thing?
Nothing in the Church Handbook of Instructions or any of the manuals, the Young Women or Young Men's Manuals that I've been able to find, and I've looked quite extensively through those things. There is the new True to the Faith Manual, where there is a statement about crosses, and it says, only those who are chaplains, or something along these lines, only chaplains wear crosses in the church.
Chaplains?
So there's different, only chaplains, military.
Oh,
chaplains,
okay.
Military, right,
you.
That they have cross badges. So I guess you could interpret that in one way, saying, well, here we have the church authorities denying the existence and essentially lying about some members of the church who deviantly wear the symbol of the cross or hide it under their shirt or whatever. Because you know there are some members who do wear the cross and do accept and embrace it, even though they're the minority. So that's one way of interpreting it. I think that's an unreasonable way to interpret it. What I think is being said is that only chaplains should wear the cross. That it's a statement of how things should be, not necessarily what is practiced.
What about in the David O. McKay Priesthood and Religious Study Manual? Since this kind of started with him, was there anything included in that book of instruction related to this?
Not that I know of. I can't. Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would have found it if that was the case, because I've looked just about everywhere that I've exhausted my sources pretty much.
Okay.
So,
thanks.
Yeah, not that I'm aware of.
You know, it's interesting that there is so few, like, official or even any official statements. I guess it speaks volumes about the cultural homogeny, or how we all choose to kind of follow and watch and observe each other very carefully. And that's probably not just a cultural artifact of Mormonism, but, you know, anything out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
what do you think?
Go ahead.
Let's play what if. let's say, what if you're an LDS family in the middle of the great state of Utah, Stan, and you had crosses everywhere, all your kids wore them, you had them in your house, you had it on your Bible, whatever, what would you speculate would happen to them?
Well, they won't, of course they won't get excommunicated. depending on the bishop, of course, I think in most instances, or in most instances, the bishop or some other church authority or maybe a friend would pull them aside and say, hey, what are you doing? Don't you know that there is something contrary about the cross? It's inharmonious to Mormonism.
And they say, yes, I understand that you believe that, but I think it symbolizes good things.
Right. And more power to them if that's the case. But I think they'd have to endure some ridicule.
Well, you know,
would they cease to be called to any good callings? Or would they sort of have eyebrows raised?
Probably.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it really would depend on how liberal or progressive thinking the bishop is. There's no church policy that I'm aware of that would forbid them from having any particular calling. Now, unless they were praying to it, that would be a concern, I'm sure.
So to me, it seems like it's kind of on par with having two or three ear piercings or a young man wearing a pink shirt to church. Right.
Or long hair on a man.
I'm sorry?
Long hair on a man.
Right, or facial hair, you know, if you're going to be a bishop. You know? Yeah.
So, Mike, do you think, now I know when I was a younger man, sometimes kids wore them as a slight act of rebellion, like I just implied. Do you think attitudes are changing at all towards it?
Yes. I get the sense that, especially with this extra push that we've had under the direction of President Hinckley to emphasize the Christianity of Mormonism. I think that is happening. I think members of the church are at those people who had a hard negative view of the cross. I think that is softening up. And I think the people, the minority group who previously accepted the cross and used it, I think that group is growing. So as far as the direction that the church is going, I see it becoming more and more accepting of the symbol.
In this context, then, is the cross less a symbol of the atonement and more a symbol of assimilation to mainstream Christianity?
I guess you could kind of see it that way. Yeah. But of course, it would really depend on the individual. I think sometimes just... Go ahead.
I was thinking more than that. It would be just a thing about the youth going to the fact that all the popular music stars are wearing the cross and probably don't even know what it means. I mean, you have to look at just pure fashion sense as well as one of the options that people could start wearing this thing for.
Right. I think there would be a number of factors that would contribute to it. Also, maybe open dialogue and you know, this being the information age and people just talking about this issue. I think there's a number of factors that are contributing to this.
Yeah,
it seems to be a movement at the grassroots level of Mormonism.
I think it's hugely telling that the Mormon Times printed your article. I mean, that shows to me a real strong shift in Mormon attitudes about it and how we want ourselves to be perceived.
Right. Even though there was a little bit of a PR concern for the church. You know, they didn't like the words that I used as far as opposition, contempt for the symbol, aversion, those types of words that I used. But even though we may disagree, and I may think that their response is a spin and is inaccurate or maybe even slightly disingenuous, the fact that they're saying that they don't have an issue toward the cross, that I think says something. I think that says that they at least have an understanding of the importance of showing the world that they are sensitive to the beliefs of others and that they're maybe more accepting of Christianity, mainstream Christianity, and the ideas and styles that they have in custom.
Yeah, I can tell you in my experience, and I'm sure it's mirrored by many others, that I have witnessed children being ridiculed in the state of Utah for wearing a cross. So I would assume the church would like to see that change.
Right. Yeah. There's been some pretty unfortunate things that's happened in the past. And it's nice to see that members of the church and also church authorities to make amends and try to move forward and be more concerned with interfaith dialogue.
Okay, when speaking of kind of opposition, I know in observing last few months in the online world, especially that dealing with apologetics, you've taken some heat for your articles. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay. What do you want to know?
So
yes, I've taken some heat, yes.
So, and largely from some more established apologists, what is it that you're saying that gets them upset?
Well, those people who, apologists who have taken the heaviest or have dished out the heaviest criticism against me are those who have neither attended my Sunstone presentation nor read my thesis. So it seems to me that for the most part, those criticisms are based off of ignorance. And they might have different views if they were to actually hear what I had to say in my research that I hope to publish soon.
So,
but yeah, some of the big concerns that they have, I guess, are me bringing up Freemasonry, me bringing up folk magic. Part of my research tries to explain why early Mormons didn't mirror early Protestant views of the cross. And there's three factors that I believe come into play. And these factors are Freemasonry, folk magic, and the pre-Columbian use of the cross, and that's found in Native American remains. Early church members saw this as evidence validating the authenticity of the Book of Mormon. But then as time progressed, as you know, the ties that the church had with Freemasonry, when they moved to Utah, when the members of the church moved to Utah, became isolated, Freemasonry kind of became a thing of the past, and so did folk magic. And so those two influences quickly lost their strength upon the minds of the saints. And I think all three of those factors were what helped early members of the church to embrace the symbol of the cross. Now, for example, as far as magic goes, folk magic, all three of the Smith family magic parchments, I'm not sure if you've seen those before. They're published in Michael Quinn's book, Early Magic and the Mormon Worldview. Three of the magic parchments have crosses on them.
Interesting.
Yeah, all three of them. And all the basic manuals that would have been available to Joseph Smith have crosses in them, being promoted as having magical significance. Okay. And Freemasonry itself, they were excited about pretty much any symbol that they would come across,
right?
Including the cross. And so I believe that was a major influence on the minds of the saints to embrace the symbol of the cross. There is the walking cane of Joseph Smith. It's a serpent walking cane, and I argue in my thesis that it has Masonic symbolism. Maybe even some magical significance to it, as Quinn suggests. But yeah, it has on the shield, there's a shield that's engraved onto the serpent walking cane, where it has Joseph Smith's initials, and it also has an inverted cross or a teaching, or the cross of Peter, engraved in it as well. Yeah. And so I think that's evidence, along with the Nauvoo Temple stonework that I mentioned before, the crosses around the pentagram windows, that would be Masonic influence.
Now, there is a veiled reference to the cross also in the Book of Mormon in Alma 39:9. And now, my son, I would that you should repent and forsake your sins and go no more after the lusts of your eyes, but cross yourself in all these things.
Right. There's a debate about how that passage is to be interpreted.
Robert Rees has argued that that the phrase "cross yourself" refers to the actual symbol of the cross, and it is associated with the act of making a covenant, not necessarily the Catholic practice of making the sign of the cross, but something similar to that. Now, I don't know which side I would lean to on that. It's still up for grabs in my mind. But I think both interpretations, the second interpretation would be just that the phrase "cross yourself" is used at another time in the Book of Mormon, and that's referencing, you know, basically just to check yourself to make sure that, I guess to cross check yourself to make sure your thinking is right. Whatever.
Well, that verse. I think someone would need to look at that verse in other languages as well, because I doubt that would translate into Spanish or Norwegian or whatever.
Yeah.
you mean in Reformed Egyptian?
Oh, there you go.
And, of course, there's several references directly to the cross, and then there's, like in Jacob 1:8, but that all men would believe in Christ and view his death and suffer his cross and bear the shame of the world. So the Book of Mormon people apparently were fully aware of the symbolism of the cross.
Right. And what I like about this passage is it even stresses the importance of viewing the cross, which seems to undermine the rationalization that it has been promoted by President Hinckley, that we really shouldn't focus on the symbol of Jesus's death. Yeah, I like that passage a lot.
So let's talk a little bit about you and your journey with this. How has this interest in the cross affected your faith?
Well, I'm agnostic. And so it really hasn't.
Well, when did that start?
The agnosticism. I left the church about 4 years ago. Yeah.
So you served a mission.
I did, yes.
Completed your bachelor's degree.
Yes.
While you were still in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And then what?
And I left the church in middle of grad school. It just so happened that when this happened, I was writing a paper on Constantine and the battle before the battle at the Milvian Bridge and the vision that Constantine had. And I would read about how Constantine's vision, he has different versions of the story. And each time, or each later, later account of that story seems to get more and more elaborate, more and more detailed, more and more miraculous. And when I would read that, I'd say, aha, there's evidence to discount Constantine and his vision. And then I would read about how Constantine, he experienced another vision, but this was a year or so before. And he wasn't visited by the Christian God this time. He was visited by Apollo, the pagan god. And so I would look at this and I'd say, aha, more evidence to discount the story of Constantine. But then all of a sudden it dawned on me that I was being hypocritical. the same kind of reasons that I had to question Constantine, I had those same reasons to doubt Joseph Smith. And and this hypocrisy that I noticed really bothered me. And so because of that, I decided with a combination of these other things that I was experiencing that the church just wasn't for me.
And so, now, as I listen to your story about your interest in the cross, it would seem to me, and you can verify this is true or not, it would seem to me that when you were a believing, practicing member of the LDS Church, you gravitated towards a more traditional Christian view, kind of exemplified in the cross. Is that true?
No. I lost my faith in biblical Christianity altogether when I left the church. Yeah.
So what led your interest into coming back and doing thesis work on Christ, the cross, symbol of the cross, and its relationship to Mormonism then? I'm trying to struggle with how that connection happens.
Well, I had already started. I had already started grad school, and I had already started my research, and it was in middle of grad school that my faith was shaken. Yeah. But I continued on. I continued on with my studies and my education.
Yeah. So you started this topic as a thesis when you were still a believing member, and then during the process you lost your faith in the church and in the biblical Christianity, but needed to, at that point, continue on and finish out the work on your thesis.
Yeah, I finished my thesis as an agnostic.
Okay.
But, yeah, I was still very concerned with biblical Christianity, or at least early Christianity, in my studies, because apologists would argue that early that it's right for Mormons to not use the symbol of the cross, because early Christianity didn't either. And so part of my studies explored whether or not this was true. And so, yeah, biblical Christianity, early Christianity, was something that I was interested in learning more about, even though I was studying it as an agnostic.
So can Mormons do the fish?
Can the what?
Can Mormons do the fish on their car?
Do the fish?
The little metal fish on the back of the bumper?
The magnet fish?
Yeah.
I suppose they can, yeah.
That's a work for somebody else's thesis.
Yeah, right. I think that has also become more popular too, but yeah.
Mike, it's been a fascinating look at Mormons and the cross. We'll put links up to the Salt Lake Tribune article, the Mormon Times article, and if I can find them, I'll try to find some links to the
Magic Parchment.
Yeah, the Magic Parchment.
It's the Smith Family Magic Parchment. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any other blog or anything you want to throw out there?
I guess just my new blog that I just started.
Okay, where's it at?
It is culturalmormoncafeteria.blogspot.com.
All right. Thanks again, Mike. And thanks to the panel.
Thank you.
Once again, you can follow up with these and any other discussion on themormonexpression.com. If I can find the number, you can give us a phone call at our...
Just go to MormonExpression.com and it should be on there.
Right. And
way to go.
Thanks.